We'd absolutely do Man of the Hour and the Hero. Please let me introduce Chris Shaw.
Hello. Hello, egg podders. We're all together now. Who would have thought? Well, this is quite surreal. I can see the Riley brothers who've come from Glasgow. Brothers. Sorry, sisters. Right, sorry, I'll come back on. Okay, this is going to be surreal. Look at us. It's amazing. It's so good. Let's crack on. I'm guessing, hands up here, who listens to the egg pods? Wow. Okay, so I'm going to do my intro. You might be able to help me out. Are we recording this? We are recording this. Hello, and welcome to I Am the Egg Pod with me, Chris Shaw. The egg pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a... So, you know who the guests are. Should we just bring them on? First of all, Samira Ahmed. And this morning, he was doing the morning show on Six Music, and somehow he's managed to get here from Salford. Stuart McConey! And a guest who's been on a lot of times, and he's a bit of a hero of mine, actually. It's the first time I've ever said that. No pressure. David Quantick. And here we are. This is wonderful. This is so lovely. And amazing. You think, sorry, I'm just going to say, you know, all through lockdown and everything, we were all stuck in our little holes. Well, I was. And we were just all sort of sharing the love of the Beatles, and now we're all here. I think it's really lovely. Anyway, moving on. First of all, there's some Beatles news about a possible new Beatles single, Now and Then.
Yeah.
And there's been a bit of controversy online, obviously, about the AI aspect of it. But what are your thoughts? I think, Stuart, you're looking keen.
I don't know. I mean, I remember when Free as a Bird, when the anthology songs came out. And I remember before that initially having been kind of sceptical and thinking, oh, I'm not sure if I want to hear these. And then remembering the feeling I got when I heard them, which I don't know if you felt the same, but it was eerie. It was a weird feeling. It wasn't just pleasure. It was spooky as well. So part of me wants to hear it and want to see what they've done. But I don't know. I'm a bit worried about AI. I'm a bit nervous about it. A bit nervous about when technology was just putting working class people out of business. It was all right, wasn't it? But now that it's putting middle class people out of a job, it's suddenly a terrible thing, isn't it? You noticed that. Yeah. But no, I have mixed feelings about it, really.
Yeah. Samira, yeah,
I think I feel like Stuart. I don't object. I'm just a little wary, and there is a sense of, why didn't they do this at the time of the anthology? And that's my slight concern. But, you know, I kind of respect anyone's right to do what they want with their own material. And if they've all agreed it, you know, which they have, I don't object morally, but, yeah.
I think the thing with George, before he died, he was adamant. I think he described this as effing crap, the song, Now and Then.
I think it was his last words, wasn't it? Scatter my ashes in the Pacific, and whatever you do, don't let them bring out that effing piece of crap.
Because he wouldn't. George put the kibosh on Carnival of Light, didn't he, on Anthology?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd rather hear the disco remix of that first, but, you know. Yeah.
But, I mean, for me, it's like, there's a long tradition. Yeah, it goes back to the days, if you remember, electronically reprocessed mono for stereo. Yeah. When they remix, which is just Giles Martin now, but or, you know, as far back as the Beatles movie medley, which was a riposte to Stars on 45. So people have been messing with Beatles records, but this isn't, you know, it's not really a Beatles record. It's a John Lennon demo with a robot playing the violin.
Yeah.
And while that's exciting,
yeah,
it's not a Beatles record. I mean, Jeff Lynne wasn't in the Beatles. He wishes he was. He spent 30 years trying to make people think he was, but he wasn't. So, yay.
Apologies to the Lynne family who are just sitting over there.
You're playing to the considerable anti-ELO lobby in the audience, are you? Yeah.
No, I could see that. Is that little dog from the internet with the sunglasses on and the frizzy hair? No, it's... But yeah, anyway, so that's my... It's not a Beatles record. I want to hear it, and Stuart's right.
Yeah.
Free as a Bird was amazing. You know, Ringo said, you know, like, oh, we just pretended John had gone on holiday. And what?
Yeah.
And left you a demo of a... It's...
If
John Lennon had gone on holiday, I tell you, the one thing I wouldn't have done is mess with one of his demos. He'd have killed me. Anyway, that's my opinion.
Thank you. I think the one thing I would glean from it is the fact that Paul has had an interview recently where he was saying, George wasn't really... well, he hated it, really, but I've always said I'm going to get it out there, and now I'm going to do it. George also said the same thing about Carnival of Lights.
Yeah.
So... throwing it out there, the possibility.
But I think, isn't it? Have I got this right that Olivia has always said no to Carnival of Light since then? But I don't know, Tom. I don't know why we've got into Carnival of Light cul-de-sac, but at some point we always will in any Beatles conversation, won't we? So, you know what I mean?
I think all roads lead there.
There's quite a few people probably going, what's Carnival of Light? I've never heard of it.
I think everybody here knows.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm sure.
Jeff Lynne at the back going, I don't know this.
Investigate. Note to self.
Note to self. Steal.
It's okay.
So normally we, as you probably know, get a guest on and say, what's your favourite Beatles album? We're going, sorry, I'm going back to you. Track by track, favourite album. It's not going to be time for that, obviously, today. So I've asked each guest, and hopefully they can remember, but I will remind you if not, your favourite Beatles moment. So Stuart.
Starting with me.
Looking keen, yes.
My favourite Beatles moment would have to be, I think it's the 6th, I may have got this wrong, Mark Lewison's in the audience, he'll remind me. It's either the 16th or the 20-something of October 1964, when the Beatles played the ABC Cinema Wigan.
13th.
And in the audience, taken by an incredibly perceptive mum, was me. So the first gig I ever saw, one of the first things I can remember is being taken to see the Beatles at the ABC Cinema in Wigan. And at this point, normally in the pub conversation, I just sit back and have a drink and wait for that to, they played. Mark really kindly last week sent me a whole file of stuff related to it. So I've now got pictures of the Beatles arriving late. I think they broke down on the way. So the pictures of them jumping out of the van in Wigan, pictures of them backstage in Wigan, and pictures of the crowd, of the audience. Sadly, no toddler in a romper suit as yet. But that's my holy grail now, to try and find a picture of myself at
is
that gig.
How old were you?
Three, four.
And so two questions. Did your mum scream, and who was her favourite Beatle?
My mum's favourite Beatle was Paul, I think. But I don't know if she screamed, but I refer you to a book I once wrote called Side with Roadies. There's quite a long bit in there where I talk about this, about me interviewing my late mum about it, and about her knowing everything about the queuing up procedure, the weather conditions on the day of the queuing up, where we ate on the morning of the concert, or the afternoon of the concert, where we ate afterwards, etc., and where we went to this chip shop by my grand's house and stuff like that. But when I said to her, what was the Beatles concert like? She said, oh, you know, it was great, it was the Beatles. And I said that was destined to be a music journalist. It obviously runs in the family with, you know, all the peripheral stuff in there, nothing about the actual music.
Is there not a picture of you with your little Grundig tape recorder in the dressing room going, what sort of music do you like?
So, no, that's my seeing the Beatles is my...
Do you remember what they played at all?
Do you know what, Samir? I think I've convinced myself that I remember it, but, I mean, I can't really, can I? I think in my mind's eye, I have these pictures of guys in black and white suits, noise, light, screaming. But I think I've probably retrospectively AI engineered it in my brain.
Because
yeah.
I can tell you, they were late. apparently they were brought there by sympathetic police officers because the car broke down.
It looks like a police van that they're jumping out of. Yeah, it does, yeah.
And they were starving. So basically, I think it's either Mal or Neil arrived with a large white jug, bowls and spoons, which to me suggests cornflakes, which was their staple diet in Hamburg. So even in 64, they're still munching away at the cornflakes.
No, that will be the old Wigan jug of gruel that we greet all visitors to the town with.
Yeah.
Don't you think the whole history of the Beatles had been so different if they'd had access to, like, modern snacks? So, you know, you watch those Get Back sessions and it's just toast and tea all day, every day, whereas that would be like, you know, what kind of latte do you want? And what kind of... You can just imagine they would just spend hours on that instead of creating songs.
Yeah. There's two Beatles cornflakes-related songs. Can anybody... Hands up if you... Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
Yeah.
I'm the walrus.
I'm the walrus. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I'm the walrus, yeah.
Samira, what's your favourite moment?
So I
think I can guess.
I think my favourite moment has become a moment in the Beatles at Stowe tape. Can I ask, first of all, who's been to the British Library to hear it now? I know... Hey, well done. Did you enjoy it? Oh, Peter. Hello, Peter. Did you get taken by surprise by the bit where John accidentally recorded? Was it Flaming? What was the track he recorded over it? Yeah. So there is a moment on the Stowe tape where suddenly there's something else and then it cuts back to the Beatles.
Wow.
Which is a bit unfortunate. But I love the moment when they start taking requests. And the way I describe it, it's like there's an energy transfer going on in the room where you suddenly realise the energy of the Beatles has fully infected all these upper-class schoolboys, and they're starting to release their inhibitions. And you hear that... You know those Frankenstein movies where you see the electricity jumping across from one point to another? That's what's going on that tape. And then they start shouting, A taste of honey!
I love that. That's my favourite bit. A taste of honey!
So that's my favourite moment.
I mean, I'm hoping everyone here will know, but the story is you were instrumental in unearthing this via your show.
I was lucky. So there is a person in the audience who is really instrumental. So that's Philip, who's sitting on the end of that row there. We were on holiday near Stowe last year, and he has a connection to the school. So we arranged to go and visit, and we were shown round, and it was still the school holidays, but I saw this blue plaque on the theatre and I went and read it, and I saw that the 60th anniversary was coming up of the Beatles playing this boarding school, which sounded like a gig like no other, which it was. And I thought there's a story in an all-male audience at this strange point in the Beatles' history when it's April 63, so they're on the cusp of becoming the kind of biggest band in the country and then the world. And I didn't know there was going to be a tape until a couple of weeks before we went to the school, and the headmaster put me in touch with the few boys who were still around who talked about the tape, and only one of them could, sorry, who talked about the concert, and the only one who could come to the school was John Bloomfield. And in that email, I know some of you who heard the Egg Pod will know the story, but for those who haven't heard that episode, I was copied into an email on March the 3rd, 2023, in which Anthony Wallerstein, the headmaster, said, oh, there's a rumour going around that someone ran a tape recorder on the concert. Is this a Stowe myth? And the reply came back within 12 minutes from John, not a myth, twas I. I'll see if I can find it out and if I can dig it out and it's still playable. So he must have known that this moment was coming. And he obviously decided that he would go public about it. But crucially, and he's told me since, his son knows my work in front row, and I think that was instrumental in why he decided to tell me. So I'm very touched. Yeah. And so he brought extracts of the tape on his laptop. And it was amazing because he played it through the PA system on the stage, which is still the same stage with the same floorboards. And hearing it pumped out very loudly at a distorting level suddenly made it become physically real. And, you know, so many of us have seen concert films, but don't know what it would have been like to have been in a room where they were this unknown force that arrived in your world and a kind of clash of, you know, classes and everything. So it was lovely. And yeah, so he's donated it to the British Library. So as long as you turn up in person, you can hear that concert. And it is amazing.
So do you have to book it? Can you literally just walk in and say?
You have to get a reader's pass, which you can apply for online and it's free. But then once you've got that, either in Boston Spa in Lincolnshire, if any of you live near Lincolnshire, you can just turn up there, or at the site near St. Pancras in London, and just go in and they'll put you at a terminal and you can just, you know, you just play it.
Wow.
And, I mean, the other bit of news, which we'll have to see, is, you know that there's a second Stow tape, which is the girls, the tuck shop master, separately set up his own tape recorder in a flower pot, believe it or not, at dinner after the concert. So the Beatles recorded twice that night without knowing it. And although the original tape was auctioned off in Japan in about 97 or 98, the family kept a copy of it because they auctioned it off without copyright. So it's a decent quality copy, which we've also heard and played on Front Row. And that may also go into the British Library, hopefully.
Two shows thing, it's amazing. The Wigan thing that I was at, they did two shows, quite standard at the time. 6:30 and 8:30, four other bands on the bill. I mean, they must have been going like the clappers, mustn't they? You know what I mean? It's extraordinary.
Because that was one of the things about the Stow tape, is where they actually, Paul McCartney apologises and says, oh, we're used to doing 2 half-hour sets, so they don't quite know what to do. So that's where they start taking requests, because they've only got a certain number of songs that they would normally play in a half-hour set.
Going back to Wigan, those bands, I mean, basically they were all on Brian Epstein's NEMS table. And there's one I particularly like, Michael Haslam, who was a solo singer. And he basically, Brian didn't really do much with him. He was, and he's an amazing singer, but his sister was Annie Haslam.
Oh, really? From Renaissance.
Right.
Yeah. So,
wow. Northern Lights.
That is my all-time favourite song.
Yes. Went out with Roy Wood, who was in the move with Jeff Lynne. It all comes round. Northern Lights by Renaissance is about Roy Wood.
Is it?
Yeah, so what do you think of all those romantic lyrics in Northern Lights by Renaissance? I don't know how we got here. And it's all about Roy Wood.
That's the very first song that I remember being obsessed with as well as a child,
Oh, I love that song.
We're going to do a Renaissance podcast later on if you want to stick around for that.
Destination. David, tell me about your favourite... Oh, sorry, have a quick drink. And then...
No, it's too late now. So my favourite moment is I'd been to London... And I'd had some lunch in the days when I drank, and I fell asleep on the train back to Hastings. And when I woke up, Paul McCartney was sitting just over there and with some men and was signing autographs. And I sort of blearily... And he got up with one of his crew. And the train stopped, or was about to stop, at Roberts Bridge, which is near Hastings. It's a bit further down from Tunbridge, just before Crowhurst, a bit past Frant, not as far as West.
You can leave this bit out of the story, David.
It's really not much of a story. Anyway, so Paul McCartney stood by the door of the train, and he says to the man with him, do you remember last time we were here and the door didn't open? Then he caught my eye. It was not easy to do because, to be honest, my eye was floating in this sea of redness and I'd just woken up. And he looked at me, and I'll never forget, he said, the last time the train was here, the door didn't open. And you know what it's like? You know, I'm a music journalist. I've written about Paul McCartney. I've written books about the Beatles. I've reviewed his albums. I've been a fan for years. Millions of thoughts through my head. And I said... That Southeastern train's for you. And he gave me that look that he gives people who say, why don't you put some tambourine on that track?
Yeah.
That normally leads to him saying, did you write Yesterday? Did you?
Yeah.
My other Beatles moment is nothing to do with that. It's that ting sound on Girl.
Nowhere Man.
Nowhere Man. I always get those two mixed up. I think I didn't say that to Paul McCartney.
Musicians in the audience might like to know. I think what David means is the harmonic at the end of the solo. Isn't that what you mean?
The ting.
Yeah, he means the bing at the end. Yeah. Sorry to go on nerd on your ass, but you know.
The bit where George Harrison goes ting on the guitar in whatever song it is, Carnival of Light, I don't know.
Can we pick another second moment as well?
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Well, my second moment is asking Paul McCartney about buses and realising he really loves buses as much as I thought he did.
He does.
Yeah, so this was when I interviewed him at the launch of the lyrics, and it was something I discovered talking to you on the podcast, which was there's all those songs with mentions of buses. And then there's also, I heard an interview with him when he talked about the cover for Sgt. Pepper being designed to be something you could take out of the paper bag on the bus home from Lewis's. And the sense that he spent a lot of time on the bus going to and from grammar school, and it was thinking time, and it was where he and John and George had kind of all got to know each other in a way. And then I asked him about it, and it turned out his grandson had done a whole thesis at university about the Public Transportation Act of, was it 1948?
think
Herbert
so,
Morrison,
yeah.
which basically created a network of nationalised buses all over the UK, which meant that kids, for very little money, could travel from anywhere to anywhere. And so George and Paul went across Liverpool to pick up a chord they'd heard about. People went to gigs, and later on in the decade, people went to demonstrations, and that whole counterculture was essentially enabled by a cheap, subsidised national bus system. It's just a lovely story.
So yet another reason to oppose the privatisation of our essential utilities, because you wouldn't get the Beatles now because of that. I think for inanity and embarrassment, I can beat David's interaction, though. When the first time I met Paul McCartney, everybody who interviews Paul McCartney ever always thinks, I'm not just going to ask this, I'm going to think something witty and clever to ask him, that he'll go, well, in all my years, no one's ever asked me anything that witty and insightful. And I said, and right, let me preempt this quickly with, I said to him, have you ever even for a moment wished that you'd been in Jerry and the Pacemakers instead? Now, what I meant was, you could have had the fun, and like I'm sure some of the Beatles' families wish they'd been in Jerry and the Pacemakers instead of the Beatles. And I kind of meant that. You could have had the fame, you could have had the long career in music, but without all the dreadful hassle that's gone with not least seeing your best mate killed, you know, because of it. But he went, I'm sorry? And as soon as the words left my lips, I thought, no, and I said, okay, let's move on. And I said, so your new album is really great, Paul. And he said, no, what did you just say, Stuart? And I said, no, he said, did you just say, would I rather have been in Jerry and the Pacemakers? And I said, yeah, I did. I regret it now. And he sort of said, I was in the Beatles. Do you know that? And I said, yeah, I'm fully aware of that. But I think Kathleen Moran said something similar. She said she did exactly the same thing and said to him, if you were in a car crash and had to have massive facial reconstructive surgery, would you choose to look like Paul McCartney? Now, that's a really interesting question. But again, as soon as she'd said it, he went, what are you talking about? And she sort of went, no, forget that car crash question. Let's talk about your new album.
On Jerry and the Pacemakers, no. I was once talking to somebody, I won't name them, but you can work it out. I was talking to a musician once who'd been, do you remember, I think it was the Ferry Aid single, charity single, with a version of Ferry Cross the Mersey. And somebody I was interviewing from a Liverpool band was standing next to Paul McCartney as they sang the chorus of Ferry Cross the Mersey. And Paul McCartney leaned over and said to him, I fucking hate this song.
Exclusive on the Egg Pod. It's Mark Lewisohn who said this. So there was a brief conversation where Ringo was asked if he would like to join Jerry and the Pacemakers. I think it might have been a bit of a drunken one, but he would have been on bass, I seem to remember.
What? Ringo was nearly the bass player.
He's not even the bass player, best bass player in the Pacemakers.
There's a great science fiction novel to be written, isn't there? There's an alternative version of Britain in which Ringo was the bass player and Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Wow.
There's a brilliant mad book about Elvis not dying, and I think he does a gig with the Beatles at one point. He does one with the Clash, but yeah, Ian R. McLeod, Snodgrass, one of the greatest books ever adapted for Sky Arts Playhouse, which posits a world where John Lennon leaves the Beatles because he refuses to do How Do You Do What You Do To Me, and has a really miserable life. Good.
That's because it's such a terrific
much better than that
film.
One where John Lennon's a fucking fisherman. Anyway.
It's a really wonderful film.
Yeah, because he would love fish. Sorry.
I was just going to say, it's a really wonderful film.
Oh, cheers.
I think so. Samir's paying you a compliment. In case you haven't guessed, David adapted it for the screen, in case you haven't guessed. Yeah.
Yes.
It was hard to tease out that from what he said, wasn't it? Maybe there's a whole book in that. Inane things people have asked Paul McCartney down the years, isn't it?
Yes.
I was at a press conference once for some 90... Oh, it was for Anth... No, it was before Anth... Sorry about this. I've obviously lost my mind. It was in the late 80s. It was some Beatles anniversary-related thing. George Martin was being interviewed, and a journalist did put his hand up and asked if the Beatles would get back together again. George Martin just... did pause for quite a long time before pointing out the issue with a Beatles reunion.
Yeah.
Which was that John Lennon was dead, by the way.
as well as your favourite moment, I've also asked you, I've got them written down in case you've forgotten, your favourite Beatles single. So who wants to start? David?
I'll start. My favourite Beatles single is I Want to Hold Your Hand. Because, one, I love it. Two, like everybody in the world, even people who heard the Beatles saw them live when they were two. The first Beatles album that everyone bought, fact, is 1962 to 1967. Yes. It was, just is. But yeah, and I Want to Hold Your Hand, to me, is still, doesn't sound like anything else in the world. It sounds mad. So if I just that whole thing of imagining hearing that in 1963, when the charts were just full of whatever was in the charts. Yeah. People called Pat and Dave.
Songs about little dogs and things.
Little dogs, and everybody was called something like Alan Angry or Rory Fury or Tempest McFlurry or whatever. And just Love Me Do, lovely song, but kind of fits in. Please Please Me, absolutely wonderful, but it is basically the Everly Brothers exploding in space. But I Want to Hold Your Hand just sounds insane. It just sounds like nothing ever recorded, and it still sounds bad. Just little bits on it, weird bits of fudgy bass and Ringo's drumming. It's insane.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean, but I think that applies to She Loves You, and, you know, they all, to me, still have that incredible where has this come from sound to them. But I know what you mean, yeah. As I've jumped in, should I tell you what mine is now? Can't Buy Me Love.
Sorry, thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Oh, that's okay. It's Stuart's turn.
Thank you
now
for your contribution, David.
He's interrupted me. You can't disagree with me on my favourite Beatles song. No, you're wrong.
No, I think I've proved, David,
what's your favourite food? You're wrong.
No, it was a good contribution, but it was wrong. So now we move on. The people are at the back, though, by the way. This won't mean at all if you're not in the room. But you know when they do those Star Wars things where the Imperial Jury of the Galaxy are sitting judgment on you? That's what it looks like at the back, doesn't it?
It's a bit like the
And
tank
now
parade.
You, the ambassador from Earth, what say you?
It's a bit like the tank parade anyway, that was the Kremlin.
Can't Buy Me Love, because it's the earliest thing I remember, I think. Because I think I'm lying about... I'm not lying about being at the Beatles gig, but I think I'm lying about remembering it. Can't Buy Me Love, I definitely remember upstairs in my cousin's house in Swinton in Manchester, hearing that record. Two female cousins, the Beatle fans, put it on, a little bit older than me, and thinking, wow, what is this? And I think it's still absolutely, well, I think like all those early singles, it just like something from another planet, like... And I think I owe David this, because it's one of David's quiz questions, and I'm going to steal it from you now, though. What's the other thing, according to the Beatles, that money can't buy? Did you say fun? Go to the top of the class, sir. Fun, because you can't buy your love, but it can't buy you fun, according to She's Leaving Home. Good quiz question.
The other thing, he said, interrupting Stuart, about about Beatles singles, particularly early ones, is my theory about this, is that when you go, if you've ever been to a 60s disco, they don't play Beatles records. They'll play Motown, but Beatles records don't fit. Mm. You know, you'd never go along and play a bit of Motown, bit of Jerry and the Pacemakers, bit of Johnny Kidd, and then put on She Loves You. It's literally like throwing a grenade full of rainbows into a kindergarten.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
doesn't work.
No.
Twist and Shout they'd play.
That's it's not really a Beatles song, is it? I mean, they didn't write it.
Yeah, okay.
It's still a Beatles song.
It made
song.
It, but it's probably the most famous
Right, let's
version.
Take a vote, shall we? Is Twist and Shout by the Beatles... I see by the floor in my argument. Is Twist and Shout a Beatles song? Yes.
Yes, it is.
Is
yes,
Twist and Shout is. A Beatles song? No.
Yes, it is, you massive idiot.
I think I won that one. Yeah,
all right.
Right. Do you want my favourite?
Yes, please.
Okay, so my favourite song of the Beatles, or single, is She Loves You. And you know why. Because, and there's a couple of things about this. One is, I associate it with the moment when I was very young, when I finally pieced together that the Beatles were this missing piece in my understanding of the universe. I had a vague memory of seeing mop tops in black and white on archive footage somewhere on a screen, and having this idea that I didn't quite know who they were. And I think the song and that footage kind of, at some point, watching television, got joined together. And I worked out what was going on in the world with that piece of knowledge. But also, and I've said it to you, and it sounds a bit crude, but I can't think of any other way of saying it, but with the harmonies, the way that they're singing in the third person about a woman, so as a female listener, you feel you're being talked about. I would say that song is liquid sex.
We absolutely. As part of the Mark Lewison's excellent Evolver series that you did one of last week, and I did Sunday afternoon in Salford last weekend, and Mark put on the Beatles playing Don't She Loves You in Didsbury in 1963, Didsbury in Manchester. And even though it was in a theatre like this, we were all sitting down watching it on screen, at the end, we all applauded. It was the only appropriate response. Even though it might feel weird, you're applauding something that Mark was playing from his laptop on a screen. It was absolutely the only. We didn't think about it. No one thought about it. It was the visceral, immediate response to being in the presence of something that incredible, that brilliant. And
it's
remains
ethereal,
there.
Isn't it? It's the harmonies. Yeah. It's the way that it finishes on that amazing chord. And there's a magical symmetry about us talking about it today.
Anybody know what that is? I'm sure you do. 1st of July today, 60th anniversary of the recording of She Loves You.
Wow.
Today. And I'll get you. See, what you're just saying, the fact that people are applauding the name of a Beatles song.
Exactly, yeah.
How
it's
reached people, you know, it's so moving. I think what I love about the lyrics, I mean, the lyrics, as we all know, it's a very empathetic lyrics, but it was based on a Tony Hatch song, sung by Bobby Rydell, called Forget Him. And if you can kind of get an idea of the lyrics. So his version is, forget him if he doesn't love you. Forget him if he doesn't care. Don't let him tell you that he wants you, because he can't give you love which isn't there. Little girl, he's never dreaming of you. He'll break your heart. Just wait and see. So don't you cry now. Just tell him goodbye now. Forget him. Oh, here we go. And please come home to me. So the first lyric is basically saying he doesn't love you, but don't worry about it. I'm here. I'm a bit of a stalker, but, you know. But the other one is pure, everybody's comes out of it great. Yeah. You know, the protagonist who's upset, you know, does she love me? The woman, she loves him, and the friend who's, you know, taking care of his friend and passing on the message.
It's a conversational lyric.
Yeah.
You think you've lost your love? Well, I saw her yesterday.
Mm.
It's almost leaning over a garden fence. It's in a cafe talking to somebody over a frothy coffee.
Yeah. Isn't it, and isn't that the one, that's one of the classic twin beds in the Newcastle Hotel ones, isn't it? Isn't that written, probably about 2 weeks before release or something like that, in the twin beds, eyeball to eyeball in a hotel in Newcastle, yeah, which is incredible. The moments like that, like when you think about the Walton Village Fair, give me a kind of spooky feeling that when they sat down in that hotel in the twin beds, got their guitars out, they didn't know they were going to do something that was going to, or maybe they did, going to change the history of the world. It's like Walton Village, I'm obsessed with Walton Village Fate for that, that somebody there on the prize marrow stall or the drop scone competition, you know, somebody there, Paul McCartney walks across the field and they just sort of, they kind of what they're doing, unaware that the entire history of the world is going to be changed in a little shed behind them. I think that's kind of spooky and brilliant.
Yeah. Also, it's got brilliant drums.
Yes. It has.
Just totally, I mean, forget all the other drums. These are brilliant drums.
Well, yes, because I know amongst this lovely group of people, we don't have any time for that stupid canard that was put around, you know, the old jokes about Ringo. But that's one that nails it, absolutely. The drumming all the way through is incredible. But the first half a second is that Ringo little fill that it really is part of the excitement of the song, isn't it? Straight away, yeah.
It's an explosion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Liquid sex, almost. Some might say. So I don't think we're going to have time to do it, but I did ask you your favourite solo Beatles singles. I don't know if you want a reminder and maybe just pick one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to pick then, from the four I've picked, I'm going to pick Goodnight Tonight by Paul. Hey! Okay, there you go. Yeah, just because I love the whole retro feel of it, the instrumentation, it's beautiful, and it's just, he knows how to write a great song on its own terms, you know.
Oh, on the video.
Yes.
The video. The video, the kind of, it's like Edwardian. They're like Edwardian musicians.
Hair.
And swept back hair and the kind of maracas.
Because that's, we worked out we're kind of roughly the same age. So that was, I remember seeing that and then my mum saying, yeah, that's the one that was in the Beatles. What? And looking at all the photos and comparing this slick back hair of Paul McCartney and Wings on the Goodnight Tonight video, and he was the guy singing She Loves You.
Wow.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah, my epiphany moment when I was in my teens was watching Wings do the fantastic with a little lock on top of the pops, and suddenly realising this was Paul from the Beatles. Yeah. Which obviously on one level I knew, but it was like, it's the Beatle!
Yeah. Don't Come Easy, I picked it first because, well, I picked for Ringo because isn't it the first solo hit? Doesn't he have a hit before anyone else, Ringo? I think. Yeah. Have I got that wrong? Anyway, but can I have a B-side? Can I have Let Me Roll It? Because I don't know if that story's true, and I don't think it is anymore, which is a shame that was his answer to How Do You Sleep? So, and I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that rumour, you know, that you get How Do You Sleep? That horrible, mean thing to do. And McCartney answers it by a gorgeous love song that's a Lennon pastiche almost, isn't it? The vocal.
It's called Turkey, basically.
Is that,
same
yes.
production.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's true, and I know Beatle experts say, no, that's not true, it's a rumour that's gained credence. But in my mind, I want to believe it, because it's just such a fun... I love Let Me Roll It. But it is a B-side, so I know I've been disqualified. But
also, Paul's always saying that every single time somebody goes, yeah, you did Married as a Little Lamb, you know, you did a nursery rhyme after Give Ireland Back to the Irish, and he goes, no, it's a coincidence. It's like, yeah, yesterday, that's about the day before today. No, it's absolutely
yeah,
not.
Yeah.
Mine, just to save time, is Back Off Boogaloo, the brilliant T-Rex pastiche.
Great.
By Ringo. Again, great drumming at the start.
It's an incredible song. That is the most 70s of all the Beatles.
Oh, it's, yeah, it is. So basically, if you would have to play glam rock to an alien for some reason...
Well, that's it. Somebody said
I'd
to
play
me,
that.
Someone said to me once, wouldn't it be great if the Beatles had done a glam rock record? And I said, yeah. They have. It's Back Off Boogaloo. Yeah, yeah.
Also Helen Wheels, but yeah.
Yeah, yes.
Well, Hey Bulldog is glam rock, isn't it?
I'd say that's more heavy metal. Wouldn't you? It's got a very... It's kind of very heavy metal-y riff, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I guess.
I always think that's one of those, you know, and everyone says the Kinks invented heavy metal, and I always said, just to be perverse, because I prefer the Beatles, that no, the Beatles did instead. But yeah, anyway.
I'd like to hear the Sweet do Hey Bulldog.
Yeah.
Or the Eagles. I know you're a big fan.
I'd like to hear the Eagles fall into a volcano.
So, right, we've got about 5 minutes left. Do you fancy Q&A?
Wow.
If anybody's got any questions.
5 minutes.
We've got 5 minutes.
Because of their songs.
No.
And the way they sing them. And the production. And I like. Do you like the Eagles?
I quite like the Eagles. Yeah, come on. They're off the Eagles, mate.
The Eagles are basically, they're like country music for people who are really tired.
No. So these questions are mainly why doesn't David like certain groups now? Why don't you like Kenny Ball and his Jazzmen, David?
I like some ELO, particularly Mr. Blue Album Sky. That's my joke.
We've got a question over here rather than your record collection.
That's a good question.
Ooh. Who wants to start?
I'll just be very quick and say, basically, when I wrote a book about the White Album, everyone had their suggestions for what would be a better White Album, to which my reply was, it's not a mixtape, it's not a playlist, leave it alone.
You don't
read a novel and go, oh, don't like chapter 5. So my answer was, even though several songs on Sgt. Pepper are terrible, I wouldn't change a thing.
There's no several songs on Sgt. Pepper aren't terrible.
They applauded, though. They didn't know what I was going to say. They weren't listening.
I'm struggling now because I'm trying to think. They're not terrible. What are you on about? This is...
Good morning.
That's a good song.
It isn't.
Also, just seeing it in that voice doesn't make it bad.
You want to know what the enemy was like in the early 90s? It was basically me and Stuart going, no, it isn't.
This is like the Grail Marcus of the playground. Good morning. I don't know. Samir, do you know? I'm struggling to think.
Possibly that one, Good Morning.
Do you really?
Yeah. Well, whatever I say, someone's going to gasp in horror. I don't know. I need to see the track list singing it. This is one of those conversations that I have to be honest. Like, I don't tend to worry my head with what would I lose off something. I think you've got a point.
Day in the life.
I was going to say, you
got loads of songs would take that.
Day in the Life and Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
With a little help from my friends, Joe Cocker version's better. No, it's not. Yeah.
Oh, can I just mention something that made me think of that? Mm. I've written a piece for the... You know, there's a Journal of Beatles Studies at Liverpool University. So they asked me to write a piece after the Stowe tape. And they said, could you come up with the title for it? And of course, I've used the title elsewhere, but I decided to call it I Made the News Today, Oh Boy. So that's coming out in a couple of months. I shall let you know. Uh-huh. It'll be readable for free online. Yes.
I didn't know there was a Journal of Beatles Studies. I feel I ought to subscribe now to the Journal of... How often does it come out?
I don't know if it's every year or a couple of years. I think it's interesting that there's only been one print edition, the first issue, and everything else is online. Oh. So I kind of feel it doesn't have the same academic respect as other cultural journal, academic journals at the university.
Yeah.
But I thought I should write for it.
I've got someone... I think... Somebody did ask me, and I can't for the life... Oh, Dan Schreiber. But I think he's promoting a book at the moment, so... But if anybody else wants to come on...
Is there any albums that haven't been... Oh, sorry. Any albums you haven't done?
Oh, loads. Oh, right. I've got a list of Ringo's... Yeah, that's on the list. They're all on the list, but it's just getting around to recording them. And I don't know where Mark's Volume 2 is coming out either. not comparing the two, obviously. So... One more question. Hand up there.
Chris, when you consider a subscriber talking about...
Possibly for a Patreon thing. I don't know. I mean, I know it sounds like it's sort of thrown together, and it kind of is, but I do genuinely turn down a lot of people. It's going to sound like an awful thing. But if they're not that engaging or entertaining, they may be fascinating. And those ones... Actually, no, I haven't released any, so I'm not insulting anybody, am I? So it's a fine line. I do kind of try and pick the right person for the right thing, but sometimes the person who knows the thing most isn't necessarily the right person.
Yeah. We should say... You know what? On that, we should say, really, while we've got him here as a captive person, to thank him. Mm-hmm. Oh, we should all thank Chris for, not least for the extraordinary get back, you know, which I don't know about... Yeah. Thank you. Particularly as you were not, particularly for the extraordinary series of Get Back related pods that he did, which was a phenomenal amount of work and brilliant, and I think got a lot of us, like Get Back itself, to a really crappy time in this, well, everything's a crappy time in this country now, but you know what I mean? So, you know.
Bless your heart. So, I think we're going to take a short break now. I think it's like 15, 20 minutes, but the people will tell you. Please, can we have a huge round of applause for Samira Ahmed. Stuart McConey. And David Quantick. And go and get yourself a beer. The toilets are amazing, by the way.
Yeah.